Hello, and you're listening to Eco Justice Radio. A project of SoCal 350 Climate Action, our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge from Adventures in Waste. This is part three of our special four-part series called Amazon Defenders. On today's show, we discuss part three, fires, corruption, and resistance in the Brazilian Amazon, with guest Ana Paula Vargas, program manager at Amazon Watch. Ana Paula Vargas goes by Paula, has been advocating for more than 20 years with communications and culture, human rights, and social justice in Brazil. She has collaborated with international institutions to support and promote projects from popular associations, social movements, and grassroots organizations. Now she is living in the Bay Area, California, where Amazon Watch is headquartered. Welcome to the Eco Justice Radio special four-part series called Amazon Defenders, where we break down the environmental and indigenous issues taking place in the Amazon rainforest. From the oil exploitation in Ecuador and the Western Amazon to the impacts of deforestation and fires and COVID in Brazil and the Eastern Amazon region. Today on part three, we shift our attention to the Eastern Amazon and the Brazilian rainforest, where the issues of deforestation, road development, agriculture, mining, and COVID-19 are integrally connected to the health and viability of the rainforest and its people, but also connected to a strong indigenous-led movement for human and environmental rights. In 2020, deforestation in Brazil's Amazon rainforest surged to a 12-year high, losing 2.7 million acres. The number of fires so far this year are also at a decade high. In only the first 10 months of 2020, the blazes are up by 25% from 2019. 2019, when the destruction spurred international outcry. So why is the Brazilian Amazon inside the Earth's largest rainforest on fire? Could it be that soybeans, meat, metals, minerals, and other commodities produced in the Brazilian Amazon and shipped around the world are taking their toll? We will explore inspiring stories of indigenous resistance to protect sovereign territories from corporate invasion, exploitation, and extraction. In the Amazon, community-born resistance is the reason for change. Even recently, the largest number of indigenous peoples were elected to the Brazilian government. Thank you for tuning in to Part 3, Amazon Defenders, Fires, Corruption, and Resistance in the Brazilian Amazon. It is my honor to welcome our guest, Ana Paula Vargas, Program Manager at Amazon Watch. Welcome to Eco Justice Radio.
Oh, hi, Jessica. Hi, everyone who is listening to us. It's an honor to be here and to be able to talk about what is happening in my country and in the Amazon and in between and amongst indigenous peoples. So it's a pleasure to be here.
It's an honor to have you. Paula, you are the Brazil Program Manager for Amazon Watch. What is it that you do in your position?
As the program manager of the country that now occupies more than 60% of the entire Amazon basin, we have in hands a big challenge. We have a team of consultants in Brazil working with communications as indigenous liaisons and as legal advisors, helping us to work in four main axes. The first one is that we work to try to defend the Amazon rainforest by revealing the collaboration of international corporations that are collaborating to the violation of indigenous rights and for the destruction of the Amazon. We call this one of our biggest campaigns, that is the Complicity in Destruction campaign. Recently, we launched a report with the associations of indigenous peoples from Brazil, where we denounce the roles of big finance corporations in the destruction of the Amazon, while they are investing in companies that are collaborating for many different types of violations, such as land grabbing, deforestation, not consulting indigenous peoples, and we can talk more about that later. The second axis is the supporting indigenous organizations and communities, and we do that via our fund. We call it Amazon Defenders Fund, because we understand that it's most, the most important thing is that in the future, those peoples, the communities and traditional peoples in Brazil will not need the support for organizations such as ours. They will be organized and autonomous and be the protagonist of their own claim and fights. So we support projects, we support their institutional capacity and creating ways and tools that they could defend their own rights and defend the Amazon forest. The third one is what we call raise indigenous voices. And it is area that we work through advocacy and communications. We are very happy this year, for instance, that we could support a new youth-led indigenous collective called Media India. They are doing amazing job in the social media and denouncing and pressuring and telling stories, and they have their own voices. So that's something that we're really proud of. But we also support other initiatives and also bringing people from Brazil, like the first congresswoman elected indigenous one to Washington, D.C. to have meetings, for instance, with Deb Haaland. And the last one, it's not less important, that we call Defender Defenders, almost as the name of this series. It's a program where we understand how vulnerable indigenous peoples and land activists and defenders are in Brazil. So it's a project that aims to try to support them in creating security protocols and defending them for death threats. And because in Brazil, it's a very dangerous country right now for those who are trying to defend our democracy.
So Paola, we're going to jump into further on in the conversation in regards to how Defend the Defenders has been very active in some of the campaigns that we're going to talk about and some of the issues like deforestation and road development and that sort of thing. So let's start by talking about access. Without roads, access is limited for land invaders and corporations. How does the development of roads begin that process of change for the rainforest and the communities that are living within it? And does it theoretically improve the economy? And do indigenous societies want, quote unquote, infrastructure development?
It's a good question because we have to understand how development is understood in a different way by the indigenous peoples and by the traditional society. For instance, so far right now, many of the communities in the Amazon still need 4 days to travel from one community to another, and they do that by boat. And it's not because there's no roads, it's that because that is the traditional way also of doing. And we know that the destruction of the Amazon before, like the beginning of the 70s, was just 1%. Right now, scientists estimate between 20 to 25% of the Amazon has been totally destroyed and deforested. When we understand that it was in the 70s that the project of development of the Amazon started, and it started with the Trans-Amazon Road, we totally can put 2 + 2 together and understand that for those, the development may bring economic difference, but from many of the communities, it does not bring health or wealth. And I'm going to give you one only example. For instance, there was a project of a road, there was the 319 road, that in the beginning, it was said that it will be important for the economy of the regions between Rondônia and Manaus. Many studies were done showing that there was no sense of creating a road that because to transport goods to São Paulo will be easier and better and more economically viable by boats. So the military that started this plan changed their reasons for doing the road and said, no, it's a matter of national security to construct this road. 3 years later, another general says, no, it's not true. There's no national security problem in this region. That was in 2012. Now in 2019, this project of this road is started to be discussed again. And many indigenous people are fighting against it because we know that they will pass on big, big amount of territories. There are indigenous lands. And there are lands that, for instance, right now, if it's not for economy, if it's not because it's needed, why they're doing these lands? It has been used by politicians, local politicians, to be like a campaign promise. But also we know that the companies that build the roads are those who make more money and making them. And if we go far back in the 70s, for the first roads, for instance, there are communities that had 2,500 indigenous people. And after the road, now they have 350 people. And many conflicts arose because when this road is open in territories that pass inside of indigenous lands, they bring people that is easy to invade. And they start they start burning the places. They start invading the places. So it is not a pro-anomaly projects that will really bring development, or it's not need. It's just a big way of making money. And we kind of know those type of infrastructural. We call in Brazil the big white elephants in the middle of nowhere. So it is really controversial because it's an area that needs development and needs projects, but definitely they don't need projects that will violate indigenous rights and pass through their lands, bringing contamination, deforestation, and destruction.
And deforestation, you just mentioned. Explain that cycle of deforestation in the Amazon rainforest. Why is this a problem, and what is driving it? You had mentioned, you know, the road development. And, you know, some reports say that it's normal for the rainforest to burn, and that's what's causing the deforestation. That's a natural cycle. So what is the cycle? What's happening?
If we imagine, I don't know if, like, it's good to go to Brazil and see how humid is those places, hot and humid. The humidity is tremendous. These trees are, like, immense and old. To be able to burn one of those trees, the drought has to be so intense that it is not a natural phenomenon. When wildfires happen, it's already in the forest areas. So what happened is that the fires are not the first process of the destruction. First, they invade, then they start cutting and taking the woods, and then they put fires. And then the fire is spread. Once there is like big chunks of empty areas, the wind and the fires could make that happen. So it's important to understand that no, there is no natural wildfire process. There are like small land crops that used to like they use the fires, like small producers to prepare the land. But that areas are never standing trees and primary forests. And so this year, the situation in Brazil has gotten worse in Amazonia as well, because what we saw is that there was a 41% of primary forest burned. And that has never happened. What is showing to us is that the capacity of the forest itself to protect itself is being destroyed. So the tipping point is so real that is showing that places that before will never get on fires, it is on fires and the flames are arriving because of the process of destruction that, as I said, there is this cycle. The cycle starts with loggers taking illegal wood, selling it, then they put fires, and then like soon after they start putting cattle. 3 years later, they claim the lands as theirs. And because of the flexibilization and dismantling of the laws in Brazil, many of them are getting the titles of lands that before were natural parks, conservancy areas, and indigenous lands.
And for our listeners, cattle, meaning meat production. Cow,
yes.
Meat production.
It's also important to understand that agribusiness alone is responsible for 90% of the deforestation in the Amazon region. And cattle is responsible for 80% of that number. The rest is soy. And you can say like, oh, but I'm okay with soy. I don't eat tofu. I don't like that. Or I don't eat the drink soy milk. But soy is more than 75% of soy, it's based for food, to give food for cattle, chicken, and salmon. Even salmon from Norwegian uses soy as the base for them. So it is cattle in the end that driving the destruction of the Amazon.
And what is the government doing to change the laws to their benefit? I mean, while dismantling policies and undercutting agencies, and in that comes up this conversation that we've alluded to, which is land grabbing. So also explain what is meant by land grabbing.
Mm-hmm. I think that the most important thing for us to understand on the plans of this new government, Bolsonaro's government, is that they are trying to dismantle the structure of our constitutions and the laws that were created to protect the environment and the rights of indigenous and traditional people. In February from this year, Bolsonaro has tried to pass a bill of law that would allow exploitation of indigenous lands. And that means like mining, transgenic seeds and farming, all the industrial exploitation will be allowed there. And that is the destruction of the Amazon. Because right now what we see is that where we have like the green parts of the Amazon, or they are natural parks or they are indigenous lands. And we know because of our orange skies this year here, or the black skies in São Paulo from last year, that what happens in Amazon reflects in many other countries. So Bolsonaro has a short plan that he has to develop and to give back to those who put him in power. There were the ruralists, we'll call it the agribusiness caucus in the Congress, and the companies, there are the agribusiness companies that funds this parliamentary front to change the laws and to allow them to get more land. So the second lens that he's trying to change is the titling land, where, for instance, he promised there will not be 1 inch more of land for indigenous peoples as a campaign promise. Now he's changing also lands that will not allow the new territories to be demarcated, as we say. And also for invaders, like if the land grabbers are there for like 10 years, they will not be able to take the land back. So he's changing the timing where the land could be requested as indigenous land. So he's doing whatever he can. And the problem is that next year we'll have the election of the new president of the deputy chamber that so far is a center moderate politician. And for instance, this bill from February, he was able to not to put to vote this land because he understood that it was not a consent. There was a lot of protests from indigenous movements, for an environmental organization. And he's trying to pass that anyway.
So Paola, how is the government demonizing environmental defenders and indigenous peoples as enemies of the state?
I think you're aware of a big campaign that happened recently with a video that became viral and many celebrities in the U.S. also shared, that was called like Defund Bolsonaro. And after that video, where showed clearly there was a lie, like the government was lying about the fires in the Amazon, saying it was not true, or say that it was indigenous people that were setting fires in the forest, the general, one big general, went to his Twitter and wrote saying that the Association of Indigenous People, or PIB, was committing a crime of lesa patria, and that one of their coordinators, Sonia Guajajara, that was here with us in February and was in LA as well, she was being manipulated by leftist parties and international organizations to try to destroy the country and to prevent development. And it was a political strategy by leftist parties. So one general and also Bolsonaro says the same thing. They are in a way allowing their enemies and criminals to threaten those peoples, allowing them to invade their houses. Brazil is one of the most violent and dangerous countries for human rights and environmental activists. We had more than 5 indigenous guardians, like we call them the guardians of the forest. They are those who go to the forest to surveillance, killed by illegal loggers or miners. So it is a moment where we have to understand that indigenous rights is human rights. And they are a genocide project that tried to turn them into criminal or just make them disappear.
You are listening to EcoJustice Radio, a public-supported media outlet. Please consider making a donation to ensure that we can continue to provide socially and environmentally driven content. Donations can be made at ecojusticeradio.org or socal350.org. We hope you are enjoying Part 3, Amazon Defenders, Fires, Corruption, and Resistance in the Brazilian Amazon, with guest Paola Vargas, Program Manager for Amazon Watch, and our host, myself, Jessica Aldrich.
Paola, We've talked about it a moment ago that the deforestation is directly connected to the massive fires. These massive fires have gained massive mainstream media attention. How has this publicly helped the communities with their activism?
Thank you, Jessica, for this question, because that allows us to start talking about how the indigenous people are reacting and resisting to all those threats we are mentioning before. The fact that now they have international visibility allows them to have more alliances and allows them to show and to tell with their own voices and tell them stories. So it's not a coincidence that they're being able to organize themselves better and they're doing themselves, for instance, the support and the combat of COVID, because the government will not do it. So when we have international awareness, the possibility of having a international solidarity is also bigger. So that happens, for instance, if we think of the role of civil society supporting those, like this claim, then we have that happen in Brazil and we have happened here. Like people there before used to see the Amazon as such an exotic place and indigenous as also something that's so distant. Now, listen to them. Now they have communication projects, they have reports being launched, they are able to go to the Supreme Court and fight for their own rights. And of course that our help, our support helps them. We have also another phenomenon, for instance, we had 3 international awards, 4 this year, for indigenous organizations or for indigenous leaders given by international foundations that works for human rights. This is a way of recognizing their role, but also supporting, because those people are overwhelmed with threats. They're still living there where things happen. So when they discover that they have someone looking for them and looking at them and supporting them, this fool there with energy. And it's also a way of protecting them, because as soon as they have this visibility, some of their enemies and some of their criminals start thinking twice of using them as a target. So it is really, really important to keep giving them space and to keep listening to them, because the future of the Amazon and their lives, as I said, it's a problem, it's a matter of human rights, but it's also understanding that we all connected, we need them protecting the forest.
And I want to, you mentioned 2 things I want to dig deeper on. Threats and solutions. So just real briefly on the threats, I know that we've talked about this on part 1 with what's happening in the Western Amazon and part 2 as well. But, you know, briefly, what are some of those threats? I mean, we're talking about human health. We're talking about climate impacts. We can assume what those are, especially if you're dealing with mass deforestation and mining and road development. But what are the peoples in these communities threatened by? Like what's happening to them?
Unfortunately, Jessica, the list is big and long. The Amazonian indigenous are now one of the most vulnerable, but that doesn't mean that indigenous peoples from other parts of Brazil doesn't suffer for the same attacks. They are being threatened by land grabbers, as I say, like people that understand that wants their land, and there are different types of them. There are illegal loggers that goes for the wood and the timber. They are being threatened by white cat miners that, for instance, there is a rush for gold happening. Gold prices has been like up in the skies and they are invading and they are groups and they are connected to mafias and criminals and they are there. But they're also like the big companies of the mining, big companies such like Anglo-American, Belo Sun, Vale. They're super powerful and have thousands of lawyers and they are buying people in the Congress and they are also suffering from that. And we have the cattle and farm ranching, as I told you, they are like very, very powerful in Brazil. We call it the 3 B's. They are in the Congress, we have the biggest and the most powerful caucus is the what we call bullet, Bible, and boy's cattle, the 3 B's. So all of them are threatening the indigenous people, but we also have foreign missionaries, like there are 2 churches, evangelical groups trying to contact isolated tribes. And they do that in a moment where the COVID is spreading. So in on top of all of that, you put COVID as the pandemic and all those threats and those people that are trying to invade their lands to bring the epidemic there. So it's more than once mm-hmm. indigenous groups were like contaminated or in a slaughterhouse or by miners. So they're also a vector of contamination and death.
Yeah, and we're going to jump into some of the larger threats. And I want to remind listeners, I mean, with these developments comes environmental harm, comes pollution, comes in the Western Amazon, we were talking about oil spills. And so the health impacts of these communities from this development is astronomical and something that they have never had to deal with in the past. And so now they're looking at higher levels or even just existing levels of cancer where that has never been an issue for them. And now you have these extreme levels of cancer, extreme levels of health impacts, you know, respiratory illnesses and things of that nature that has never been an issue until this development took place.
Yeah, it's. I know that sometimes for us that are here, it's hard to think that they are suffering more when we know that like daily in the US, 3,000 people has died by COVID. But we do have a health system that's trying to get into vaccine. And we are in our houses, we can isolate ourselves. We are doing home office. We have all the ways of dealing with these problems. But for instance, right now, the mercury that are like coming from the mining companies or coming from the white cattle miners, they go to the rivers, they go to the fish, and 100% of indigenous people of the Sayre-Maybu community are contaminated. They have mercury in their blood. They are getting sick about like with that. And then if you think like historically, they have low immunity because they have like never been exposed as much as ourselves. So respiratory disease is one of the highest reason for deaths and morbid disease in the indigenous people. With COVID, they have more than almost a double of mortality rate by the COVID than a normal that we have because of our immune system. And they, as I said, like they live in places as remote as 4 days of boat. And so, and also living in cities that they're like just 4-5 CTI units. So how they can protect themselves and how they can do like fight that. So they're doing what they can with the support of many organizations, creating local places where we send oxygen concentrators for them, and they're trying to isolate themselves because after 5 months of the Supreme Court decision, the government still hasn't implemented the plan to combat the COVID in the villages.
And let's jump to COVID. I was going to talk about that later, but because you're on that topic at the moment, I'll ask a question that I wanted to bring up is, you know, the fire season starts in March. COVID-19 started in, you know, became more of a global crisis around March 2020. How has, you know, that the pandemic directly affected the communities and the indigenous peoples? You had talked about that it's there's limited access to that area, 4 days, limited access, that there's, I'm assuming, no ICUs out in the middle of the forest. And so there's those problems of isolation and hunger and all these other issues that are coming up with the mining and the deforestation and everything else. So maybe expand upon that. And I know that you had said that you had told me that the communities were creating nurseries in essence, hospitals in essence, or mobile hospitals for the lack of a better term.
Yeah, just like the COVID started in March, but normally the fire season happened in our summer, and that is winter there. So the fires started on May the 1st. Like it was not really on March, like the season itself, because before just like people putting fires. So, but what happened is that this year, some of the communities are organized in fire brigades, for instance, to try to combat the fires when it happens. But they were overwhelmed combating the COVID, and they could not get together or organize themselves, reunite themselves. So the same idea that here at the same time we're fighting against like racism and police violence with I Can Breathe Floyd movement, indigenous peoples in Brazil had the, like not only in Brazil, but in the entire Amazon has the twice I Can Breathe. They couldn't breathe because COVID has like really arrived in their communities, but they could also not breathe because of the fires and the smoke. So what it's important to highlight is that this the big organizations in Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, all over, tried to organize themselves. They created themselves a plan to combat COVID. They presented that to the government, giving solutions and giving suggestions, because for them, even if the numbers do not seem higher, when you say, for instance, that there like 1,000 indigenous people has died of COVID, who has died in COVID was the elder. And in their communities, the elders are the chiefs. We had lost like important leaders as Paulinho Paiacan, as people that are the libraries and the wisdom, the sages of the communities, because in oral traditions, they are the one that pass the histories, the teachers and the guardians of the knowledge. The impact is huge and it's big. And it's also because like many of those peoples do trade. So they produce and they go to the city and they trade, and they that is the way of like bringing resources and money. And they have to isolate themselves. So how to have food, how to bring water and money. So we are supporting, for instance, via Amazon Watch, a lot of water wells, for instance, because in some of the areas, they still have to bring water from other places. The level of threats and challenges in those areas where you cannot isolate, they all live in community areas, and water is not that they have like sink with water and hand sanitizers. So everything we have to bring, and they have to start reorganizing cultures and costumes of sharing food. And it's a challenge, but they are giving us a huge lesson. Yesterday, in the International Human Rights Day, the organizations of indigenous people from Brazil, many groups from all over the country launched their report on COVID, where they shows what was done, not done after the 5 months that they won this case in the Supreme Court to implement the plan. And they're telling us like how to organize themselves. They're doing very well in online meetings and assembly and collective decisions. And there are a lot to be learned, even in this hard and challenging year.
And not just only with COVID-19, but the indigenous resistance, the indigenous movement to enforce initiatives and solutions has been incredibly strong. It's what's leading, you know, the resistance in Brazil to prevent deforestation and enforce human rights and compliance. What is happening? Tell us about what's been happening with the recent election, where there's more indigenous representatives than ever. What are the solutions to deforestation that they're putting on the table? Zero deforestation policies. And yeah, expand upon this, because there's so much amazing things that are happening.
I know that you invited Paul, Paz, and Minyu, that is a big Star Trek fan, a Star Wars fan. And I think like what I would like want to say is that the dark side of the Force doesn't exist alone. And they are a bright side, and all the Jedi's forces are awakening, because what is happening right now is that the enemy is not only one, like they don't have only the government to fight against. There are these big corporations everywhere in the US, BlackRock and banks that are financing the destruction. There are the missionaries. They are like, they're inside like politicians from these local communities. And what is happening is that the necessity and need to organize and mobilize, it's bigger. Because it's a survival, like indigenous people are doing this for 500 years. They're fighting and they're resisting. But right now, the rest of the society has awake for what is in what is at risk. They, like far from São Paulo, where is the economic center of the country, if they felt the results of a destruction, many people were at that time awakened. So what is happening is that many associations, small associations are organizing. They are learning the language, like they're learning how to have, asking for internet. They're organizing that in themselves. They are teaching other people. They're doing like videos. They are having investing in a legal front. So we have lawyers, indigenous lawyers organizing and learning and studying and preparing themselves. They have won a Supreme Case Court, for the first time in the history. It's like we have in the past Joênia Wapichama, that is the first indigenous woman elected for the Congress in Brazil, was the first one to argue before the Supreme Court. But now we had the first case made by the indigenous people, not led by an NGO or like a party. They were there and they're representing themselves if they want. So it's a powerful thing that is happening with the support of everyone, including us here.
And you had mentioned to me previously, I mentioned it in the intro, that this is the largest amount of Indigenous representatives elected to office?
Yeah.
And so when did that happen?
So this year we had the municipal, like the city elections, and 219 Indigenous representatives were elections, or for the city council, or for mayors or vice mayors. And they organized themselves. They decided that they will support each other, and they had like collectives of independent journalists helping them. And they were really, really invested in understanding that they need to have their own representation on the government. And they're prepared to go far. They're preparing to run the next election. They're trying to support the ones that are elected now to be able to learn how to move inside of those structures without a succumb to the dark side, for instance. They are like much more powerful. So it is a beautiful, like there are a lot of pain and death and sadness and tiredness, but there is also a lot of hope because things are in process and things are moving. There's a big new generation coming there, much more prepared as well.
Previously, you had mentioned Defend the Defenders. What is that?
Defend Defenders is a coalition that reunites many different organizations to try to support those who are fighting, like the land and earth defenders, the activists, the representatives of organizations that are worldwide try to defend the environment. But we also, this is also the name of an initiative in Brazil, the Defenders and the Defend the Defenders Project Brazil Initiative, that is started now this year, with the goal of giving support and creating security protocols for threatened indigenous and human rights and environmental leaders. Unfortunately, Brazil is now the fourth country with the highest numbers of murders of environmental activists and indigenous leaders. This year alone, five indigenous leaders what do we call guardians of the forest, because there are those who do surveillance on their territory, they were murdered. And we understand that this is not isolated threat. This is a project. They are fooled by this speech, Bolsonaro speech, and the government agenda. And they represent the interests of big corporations and businessmen. So the idea is that together with other organizations, we can create a pool of advocacy initiatives and activities of communications process, but mainly a legal front that can give those people the support that the government in Brazil is not giving.
You are listening to EcoJustice Radio, a public-supported media outlet. Please consider making a donation to ensure that we can continue to provide socially and environmentally driven content. Donations can be made at ecojusticeradio.org or socal350.org. We hope you're enjoying Part 3, Amazon Defenders, Fires, Corruption, and Resistance in the Brazilian Amazon, with guest Paula Vargas, Program Manager for Amazon Watch, and our host, myself, Jessica Aldridge.
Paula, we had mentioned before the threat of agribusiness, corporate agriculture, and how that is, how it's related to deforestation in the Eastern Amazon. Can you tell us how the U.S.-based financial institutions are contributing to the conflicts with the indigenous peoples and the destruction of the Amazon?
Sure. This is super important, even more now that we heard that Biden is trying to invite BlackRock representatives to be part of their government. That is a news that we received with great, great worry. We recently launched a report, The Complicity in Destruction, third, like the three of a series, that highlight how six major financial corporations that are from the U.S., they are U.S.-based, has been investing in nine companies so far that we pointed to have been connected to human rights or indigenous rights or environmental rights violation. They are like a big range of type of violations. It can be from not consulting the indigenous people, that is a right, a constitutional rights guarantee by the International Labour Organization, and or, for instance, denying to give them energy while giving energy for invaders, or contaminating their rivers, or even being way involved in the politics that are pressuring these indigenous peoples to lose their lands and the big process that we talked already by the titling. So we have six major corporations. There are BlackRock, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, Vanguard, Bank of America, and Dimensional Fund Advisors that only between 2017 and 2020 invested $18 billion to nine of the companies that we have scrutinized in this report. And BlackRock, for instance, are responsible for investing all of them. Only BlackRock has invested around $8.2 billion in total. And what those companies say is, like, when we read their policies, many of them say they are worried with climate change, that they would not invest in companies that are involved into any type of environmental crime or that has been invested in deforestation. But in the what really is happening in the countries that where they are acting is that there is no punishment. So we are not defending sanctions or any type of moratoria because we understand how important it is for those countries to have companies and investment there. But we know that those companies can commit to a zero deforestation policy, they can commit to indigenous rights, and they can do their due diligence and stop investing in companies that are not respecting indigenous rights or they are destructing the Amazon.
What are the recommended solutions? What are, you know, what are you as Amazon Watch and the indigenous communities asking of these financial institutions or asking of the government of these financial institutions?
Yeah, for the financial institutions, for instance, we think it is very important for them to commit to zero deforestation policies and also to create policies that guarantee the respect for indigenous and human rights. But it's not only creating, but also creating verifiable targets and progress that can be public available because the lack of transparency is in the whole process. Also, they can create and strain internal controls of monitoring mechanisms. So we need to have ways of ensuring that the investments will not occur in areas that involve environmental destruction. We also think that it's important to require that any company that will receive investments from them find ways of have binding policies that safeguard indigenous rights. And for instance, it's important for them to name that they will respect the right to free and prior and informed consent that are required for these companies to eliminate deforestation of their production chains. Also, it's important for them to conduct periodic due diligence on the companies because we know how sometimes it's used to say that they cannot track the supply chains, but there are ways of monitoring and they could make this as a demanding process that their companies that they invest do those diligence, due diligence companies and track their supply chains properly. And to finish, they can and should commit to exclude those companies from their portfolio. The companies that have permanently violated indigenous rights or have like done it again, some of those companies never receive any kind of sanction. They're still there receiving money, so they need to exclude them from their list of companies. It's not much different from the government because everything goes back to the same idea of creating ways of monitoring, control, and have transparency mechanisms. And we have like good like control of supply chains. And we saw in LA that a big step was done. Like this process started in 2019, but in 2020, it was unanimously voted bill that's commit to exclude and not to allow investments and the government, the city to buy from companies that are involved in deforestation. So it's a way of using their power and money pressure to commit those companies and also to show and send Bolsonaro government a big alert. Like we are not being complicit in the destruction of this big forest and in human rights.
And for our listeners that may not know and I might need just a little bit more history on that is that in the city of Los Angeles, our city council in Los Angeles, California, with the support of Councilmember Paul Koretz, led the city to say that they were going to, in essence, divest from in the purchasing of the city itself, the city functionality, not every business within the city, but the city of Los Angeles government, from the purchasing of products that were coming from the rainforest. Is that correct?
Exactly. I could never say better. Yes. And they are coming from companies that are destroying the rainforest, because we know there are ways of producing, like there are companies that are doing good there. Like they work with the nuts, with extractivism ways, and are producing cacao, and they are there for improving the life of those that live there. And there are immeasurable resources for scientists and for healers in that area. So we do think that there are ways of developing and living in balance with the nature without destroying it.
And you'd also mentioned free, prior, and informed consent and giving permission. And then I know also comes to the issues of mining as well, is that there are these companies, be it for the ag business, the mining, the logging, they gain access to the land that we were talking about, land grabbing. But some of these times it's by the indigenous people themselves are providing quote unquote permission. But really there's this lack of actual free, prior, and informed consent. But these companies will come and say, no, there was an indigenous representative that came and signed this piece of paper, and they're self-elected representatives, and I'm BlackRock now, I'm whomever, and I have access to this land because I have this piece of paper with this person's name on it. And so maybe you could expand upon that issue that's happening, and why, you know, free, prior, and informed consent is so incredibly important.
We have to understand that for us, like as we understand ourselves as Democratic Republicans, we decided to elect representatives and to create laws that will allow our society to develop into certain standards of civilization and respect to each other and for what is from others. So when this convention established that there were really indigenous populations in those lands prior to any other people, and they have the rights of staying there, but in case of, like, those areas are protected as the conservation units as well. So the idea is that no industrial activities can happen in those areas. But in case of any company or government want to create a project, the idea is that they have to talk to the indigenous people. They are the ones that owns those the, and not only own, because the idea is that is the different side. When it's indigenous land or a conservation owned unit, the people of that country own it, but gives the indigenous people the right to use it. Once a company, a corporation enters, the country and the people from that place lose the rights from that land. So it's just like for private purpose. But then coming back to the idea that you asked, is that the consent is not only to say like, okay, I'm going to go there and ask you if you want or not. The idea is that those people has the right to veto the project. And that is the tricky part of where Bolsonaro and his like allies are trying to change. They say that they will consent, then they will consult the indigenous people, but they don't have the right to veto the projects. So this is not a real consent. Or for instance, what is happening right now, that we had a public statement from one indigenous people from the Pará, where they did a big letter against Ferrogrão. It's a project of a train. They decided, the company decided with the government, that they will do the consent by internet. And the community say, no, this is not what the law says. Like, we have protocols. Like, the protocols of consult is created by us, because we do have associations, we have leaders elected, and it's up to us to decide how we're gonna answer to your request of project. And they don't want the project already. They says like, this is not a good project for our lands, because like a train, a big ferrovia, I don't know, like the big train project will affect rivers, will increase deforestation. They already know the impacts, but they didn't do that. As every place where they have a lot of money involved, they are buying people to self-proclaim themselves like partners of the project. And they are the ones that are taking to Brasilia, where the government is, to give a speech in favor of mining, in favor of those roads. So the indigenous representatives are having to do a big role in not only in educating, but into affirming what we now know. Like, as much as Trump doesn't want to accept that he lost the election, he had to accept that there was a democratic election that put Biden in power. That's the same with the indigenous leaders. It's not because someone has started to have connections with local politicians that becoming the representative of the indigenous of that places. They are organizers. They have recognition and respect associations and leaders there.
Well, the Western civilization seems to exoticize, for lack of a better word, in indigenous communities like those that are in the rainforest. How can this sort of obsession or non-reality be detrimental, and why is it important that we change that narrative?
The risk is the same of treating indigenous people as a panda or a koala or a jaguar in the forest, like where you think that you can save those animals that are like risk of extinction, and do not giving the indigenous people the same understanding that in defending them, you're defending human rights. So when you say Black Lives Matter, it's the same thing that you're saying indigenous lives matter, but you're not saying save indigenous people, protect indigenous people, or you protect a panda. They are not defenseless. They are very well organized. They have a history of resistance and they have a lot to teach. So it is important for us, if we really need, you want to help and to be part of this movement that I try to defend the defenders, because we understand that their role in the earth is to be the protectors of the nature that is important for the balance and the life of the life of this planet, of the entire planet. We have to start to look at them as equal, because is that the way that they will be able to fight their enemies? So we are in Amazon Watch, for instance, scheduling meetings with the CEO of BlackRock and the staff of Vanguard with indigenous representatives. And we are not giving them the tokenizing, like we're not tokenizing the indigenous people. We're not calling them to do prayers, and they would do the prayers, but they have a lot to say. They are lawyers, they are deputies, they are leaders. And the risk is that if you really want to help, you have first to give them voices and to understand their role and understand that you are defending, as we have, like human right, like human rights, women's rights, Black rights, indigenous rights. As a minority, unfortunately, still consider a minority that has the same needs and needs our respect and not to be treated as an animal or exotic people.
It's not some sort of human entity beyond ourselves, that they are the same as anyone else and they are brothers and sisters. And at the beginning of this interview, we also were questioning the effects of certain infrastructure development. However, communities in Brazil want access to the same type of communication and technology as Western civilization. And I think that's part of the effects of the exoticism as well, is that we don't think that, of course, people want TVs and cell phones and internet and radio dishes. And, you know, in our exoticism, people may be surprised that these communities want these things. How are the communities using these technologies? And I know that you had touched upon this, using these technologies to drive their activism and their self-determination.
Yeah, it's a very important point, Jessica, because when they are defending their rights of having their own culture, it is not an ancient 500 years ago culture where they walked naked in the woods and lived in places with no structures. So they still want to have their histories and their cultures and songs and cosmology, but they need the same structure that we have to communicate, because we are living together in this century. So they are using, for instance, communications is through radio, internet system to monitor the advances of destruction. They're organizing themselves in using apps to show where they're having, like where the blaze is starting, where they have flames. They are making videos and documentaries and web series where they are registering the knowledge of and wisdom of their communities and the shamanic acknowledge how they're combating disease, but also to talk about the diversity of the youth. You have queer indigenous, a queer youth indigenous community and collective happening that is trying to and producing materials and communication projects. But it's also the way that they're organizing. They are all over Brazil, and APIB, these national organizations, and they have a national movement, represents people from all over Brazil. How, with COVID, indigenous people from the South, in the 9th largest countries of the world, be talking to someone in the Amazon and exchange experiences and organizing themselves to fight the same government and the same companies if they didn't have the same access that we do to those technologies. So they're giving us like a huge lessons. They made the biggest event from indigenous people around the world that normally reunited 4,000 people in Brasilia. This year has had thousands of people in the internet. Like it was huge, and they're doing webinars, they're doing panels, they are teaching, they are using the technology to defend themselves, to protect the nature, and also to organize.
Before we wrap up, I want to bring it back to, you know, we're here in the United States, yourself and I, and we happen to be in the state of California, which is a bit of a more progressive state in the whole of the United States. And we, you know, recently have in the U.S., a recently newly elected president, President Biden. How can he have and his administration have a positive effect on Brazilian politics, the environment, the people, and the destruction of the Amazon?
Yeah, I think that first of all, we shared the same feeling that many of Americans felt, is that like Trump is out. That per se, it's an important new scenario in Brazil, because Bolsonaro was not only a huge ally, but he was following and using Trump as an inspiration for his agenda. And in that sense, for instance, all the racism that Bolsonaro publicly announced with against indigenous people and against like black people, it got a support on the leader of the most important country of the world. So now Bolsonaro is also weakened, because if Trump lost, he can lose the next election as well. And he's starting to think about that. And that is showing to our country that the same way that Trump lost here, Bolsonaro can lose, because he already announced that he will try re-election in 2022. But besides that, Biden chose to use as one of his agenda, like his program, the climate change issue. And he announced the support, financial support to Amazon as a fund. So he has shown that he will be someone that we could start to talk about those policies and the recommendations that we have for the states. And being the U.S., it's totally different from the Europe, that really Macron can say what he wants to say, but Bolsonaro pretends that he's not listening. He will not try to sit with Germany to talk about how he could change and start protecting the Amazon, or accepting even funds, not to think that he has to develop the Amazon, but use the funds already there to develop the Amazon. So we know that the balance change in Biden, if he wants, he could be someone that could move forward those policies. And also, he has a huge role here in the U.S. with these financial corporations. If he decided to start being more strict into talking about foreign policies and internal procedures and advancing indigenous rights and policies and environmental laws, that will be beneficial for the entire world.
How do our listeners support what Amazon Watch is doing, and how do they keep that fire lit under the Biden administration to make sure that the positive changes do happen, and that the support of the Amazon doesn't mean a negative, but actually means a positive in relation to what we're talking about today? So where can people get more information? How can they support Amazon Watch and other indigenous communities, and how can they hold Biden accountable?
Yeah, first, please visit our website, amazonwatch.org. We have there normally calls for actions where we try to reunite forces and ask people to do actions that can be like send an email for the Biden administration or sign a petition, or we can like tweet against Chase and pressure BlackRock for a meeting. And there are many things that civil society can do together. Also, it is important to understand that we are nonprofit, as many others, as this radio program, and many of us like only survive by donations. And the way that we are here, that I'm here, being able to support Indigenous people, and we are supporting them also with funds, is that people donate. So it's also important to keep that in mind, that solidarity can happen in many forms. You can advocate for the Amazon and rights in your school. You can start pressuring your city council member for local policies that LA have. You can understand and see who is your representative in the Congress and ask them to pressure as well. And you can also support people that we know their allies, like Deb Haaland. There is a representative that we know it's a lie. And we are thinking that maybe we have people as John Kerry that may be in a position that it's open to negotiation. So get more interest in politics. I know sometimes it's hard, but it's the way that we can make some changes. And do not ever lose hope. It's a hard time we all live in. 2020 was hard for not only Indigenous people, the Amazon in Brazil, but for every one of us. And when we engage ourselves in some type of action and group, we feel hope. And that's why we are with them, because even losing their elders, losing their people, when we meet one of those leaders, they're always, always smiling. They will dance, they will do their songs. And that's a huge life lesson that we have to maybe try to apprehend as a way of living. It's resisting, but resisting with lightness and joy.
And I also want to mention, share this show too, because this is a four-part series and people want to know what's going on and they want to get the information out there. Share the show, get the information out, share what Paola has been talking about here today, and make sure that people have all of the content they need to be able to support. If they can't support financially, they can just, you know, be putting the information out there and supporting in the way that they know how.
Yeah. That is super important. Please share the show.
Yes. Well, thank you, Paola, for joining us today. It was really great to have you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting us. And thank you for this program. It's super important. And yeah, just like, I'm very grateful to be here. And I hope that next time we can have an Indigenous leader here as well.
Yes. That's part four. We are definitely going to have Indigenous leaders on the show in part four. So please make sure to check that out, everyone.
Thank you to our guest today, Paola Vargas from Amazon Watch. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This has been part three, Amazon Defenders, Fires, Corruption, and Resistance in the Brazilian Amazon. Be sure to tune in to the next and last episode of Amazon Defenders. In part four, we speak to Indigenous rights activists on how they are creating a model of resistance and international solidarity to build solution-based alternatives and protect cultural survival. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal 350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe to our podcast, share the episodes, and help us continue our efforts by making a donation at EcoJusticeRadio.org. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on all major podcast apps and at EcoJusticeRadio.org. Created by Mark and JP Morris, executive producer Jack Eit, producer Amelia Barras, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Jessica Aldridge from Adventures in Waste, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.